For the word of God that is written, for the word of God that is within us, the word of God that is all around us, we give thanks to God. So because today is that one day of the year when we get to choose between eating soup or going bowling, the Super Bowl, I'm going to preach a sermon against football. And I feel as if I should start my sermon against football by letting you know that as soon as celebration is over, I'm going to get in a car with my family and we're going to drive to Santa Clara, where we're going to watch the Super Bowl at a house about 2 miles from Levi's Stadium with a group of old and dear friends, some of whom sang in the Westmont College Choir with me and Ann, one of whom grew up in Denver and is a passionate Broncos fan and has threatened to bring to the party a pair of seats from Mile High Stadium, which he currently keeps in his man cave. These very seats are the ones assigned to his family each year when they purchase season tickets back in the 80s. There are things I really like about football. I love the strategy of the game. I like how there are several different ways to move the ball down the field, a couple of different ways to score. I love the fact that football is a game in which athletes with lots of different body types can play, from the large guys on the line to the tall, thin receivers to the wimpy guy who does nothing but kick the ball. As sports go, football is actually a fairly welcoming sport. But more than anything, I love football because I love my friends. And I like a festive gathering with lots of snacks and beverages. And I plan on having a great time at our friend's house at the Super Bowl, as we watch the Super Bowl. Provided, that is, that nobody blocks the road between here and Santa Clara in protest of one thing or another. And if that happens, we'll just sit in the car and eat the snacks we're bringing and listen to the game on the radio and join the protest if it's a good cause. It will be good either way. But I'm still preaching against football because it seems to me that football, especially as it's played in the NFL, has an ugly streak, which is growing wider each season, and therefore it's running afoul of the claims of the Christian faith, a religion rooted in Judaism and formed in its early years by Greco-Roman philosophy. And beauty is important to both of those traditions. In Judaism, beauty is evidence of God's hand in creation. When God creates the world, God stops several times to say, "It is good. It is very good," which I read as an aesthetic judgment. Later, the psalmist looks at the world around and proclaims, "O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are humans that you are mindful of them, or mortals that you care for them?" And in the Gospels, we have this morning's lesson from Luke, which tells the story we call the Transfiguration. In this story, Jesus takes a couple of friends up a mountain where he is transfigured. He's changed and surrounded in an immense and intense beauty. He's joined in that beauty by great prophets of old. And the voice of God speaks in that beauty and says the same thing that was said at Jesus' baptism. "This is my son, the chosen one. Listen to him." And Peter offers to set up tents for everyone, but suddenly it's all over and things go back to a disappointing normal and they have to go back down the mountain to life as usual. Over the years, I have found this story to be a hard passage from which to preach because no meaning is assigned to it in the Gospels. All we have is the story, and to us is left the job of figuring out what, if anything, the story means, and it could mean several things. But I've come to believe the story of Transfiguration is about beauty and about how where there is beauty, there also is God. And I'm not the only one to think of this, by the way. In her famous Civil War era hymn, the American poet and abolitionist Julia Ward Howe referenced the concept of transfiguration when she wrote, "In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us live to make men free while God is marching on." Of course, I doubt there were lilies in Bethlehem's stable. But the point remains, where there is beauty, The divine is present. And the reverse also is true. Where God is, there also is beauty. Now, according to Plato, as I understand him, Plato, the philosopher upon whose ideas much of the Greco-Roman philosophical tradition is built, and whose thinking played a large role in the formation of Christian thought, according to Plato, there is an inherent connection between beauty and truth and goodness, such that everything that is beautiful also is good, and nothing that isn't good or true cannot in the end be beautiful, however seductive and comely it may be. And this brings me back to the Super Bowl. In its pure form, football is truly a beautiful game. It is a beauty that I used to enjoy with my friends in a muddy field near my childhood home. And much later, it's a beauty I enjoyed on the intramural playing fields of Princeton Theological Seminary, where I broke my nose while going for some future Methodist minister's flag. And I still thought it was a beautiful game. It is a beauty that still exists in the athleticism of much of the contemporary game's play. But I find that I cannot ignore the ways in which contemporary professional football has become ugly. In particular, football has become not just rough, but violent. Violent in its aesthetic, violent in the conduct of its players, and violent because somewhere along the way, football became a conduit of jingoistic, militaristic nationalism. It's no longer enough just to sing the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem with its celebration of a great battle, by the way. Now we also have to sing America the Beautiful and maybe God Bless America, and then there's a military color guard and a military jet flies by at the cost of untold millions of taxpayer dollars, as if the military or love of one's country has anything to do whatsoever with football. All this, to my mind, serves the purpose of helping Americans to believe our military is just an extension of football, a game, and not an instrument of death and destruction. Nor can I ignore the ways in which San Francisco tried to pretend that no homeless people live in Baghdad by the bay, sweeping aside thousands of people who live on the streets to make room for a great big Super Bowl party down by the ferry building. And then as the game is played, players are subjected to extremely dangerous and potentially fatal head injuries, and the NFL doesn't give a damn because they fear safer play would make the game less exciting for the sport's bloodthirsty fans, just as they won't ever move to address the sexual exploitation of cheerleaders because bloodlust and garden variety lust are in the end basically the same thing, and it's all ugly in ways that are insanely lucrative, and you cannot serve God and mammon. And God, dearly beloved, is found in beauty, not in ugliness. So yeah, enjoy the game this afternoon. But I don't want to end on a downer, so let me say this. However much professional football has been corrupted by ugliness, we don't have to let that ugliness determine or limit our enjoyment of the parts of the game that truly are beautiful. The violence, the jingoism, the misogyny, that mark the contemporary game, don't have to prevent us from delighting in the skill of the players, the strategy, the healthy competition that still are alive in the game. We still can find what is beautiful and enjoy it, and we should, because if we can find the beauty in the NFL's biggest day, then surely we can find the beauty that surrounds us every day. And when we have found that beauty, we can be inspired to make beauty of our own. And who knows? Maybe it will be contagious. Because beauty often is contagious. So be intentional about finding beauty. Intentional about creating beauty. And remember, the presence of beauty marks the presence of God. And it points in the direction of all that is good and true. In a few minutes, we'll be taking communion together, and I hope you can join me in finding beauty at the table as we remember the love of God that claims us and the grace of God that fills us with life and surrounds us with divine beauty.